I'm going to give kind of a preamble that is relevant to all four presentations. So I'm going to talk about the interface between the criminal justice and mental health systems, and that won't need to be repeated throughout the remainder of the presentations. Okay? So I am first, and I have to read, as moderator and presenter, I have to read my own bio. So let me take a moment to do that. Gary Cuddyback, that's me, is an assistant professor at the School of Social Work and a faculty research fellow at the Cecil G. Shepp Center for Health Services Research at the University of North Carolina. My research interests include evidence-based practices and policies for persons with severe mental illness, particularly those who are justice involved. Okay. Let's see. Linda, can you? Let's go for 15, 17 minutes. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so title of my presentation today is Demographic and Clinical Characteristics of Jail Diversion and Prison Reentry Offenders with Severe Mental Illness. I want to acknowledge my colleague, Nikki Bissig, who works at a large agency in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'll talk about that in a moment. Did present portions of this presentation at APLS in Miami and also at the 27th Annual Assertive Community Treatment Association Conference. Okay. Mouse. All right. This study was supported by grants from the Ohio Department of Mental Health, which no longer exists. I'm joking. There is a little bit of funding that maintains the Department of Health, but not much. And the Health Foundation of Greater Cincinnati. Grateful to Diane Wright of GCB, Greater Cincinnati Behavioral Health Services, for putting data together for this presentation. And also Shirley Richards at UNC, who's a whiz programmer. No disclosures. Okay, here's the preamble I mentioned. As everyone in the room now should be aware, the public mental health system has really shrunk in the last 50 years. And unfortunately, persons with mental illness are dispersed throughout many community systems and are affected by policies and agencies over which state or local mental health authorities have little control. Explosive growth at the same time in the U.S. jail population during the 90s and beyond. And now, best guesstimates, there's about 1 million, maybe a little bit more, jail detentions a year of persons with severe mental illness. And that's the jail alone. So unfortunately, jails, prisons, and community supervision, probation, and parole arrangements now play a significant role in the care of persons with severe and persistent mental illness. If you look at the daily, at any given day, the number of folks with severe and persistent mental illness in the justice system, looking at the table below, at any given time, there's over 250,000 in our prisons, 130,000 in our jails, and almost over 1.3 million probation and parole. And juxtapose this with about 54,000 in our state hospital. And it's clear that the criminal justice system, which is not a system at all, jails are different from prisons, which is different from the court system, all with slightly different languages and missions. The justice system plays a large role in the public mental health system. Justice-involved persons with severe mental illness have complex needs. Persons with severe mental illness in general have those needs. I would argue that that's even stronger issue for persons who are justice involved. There's multiple stigmas being involved with the justice system, mental illness. Engagement and advocacy for these folks is harder. There are lots of barriers to housing and employment, supported employment, and access to evidence-based practices for folks with SMI or not, in general, are difficult, and it becomes even more challenging for those who are justice involved. There's been a variety of policy and practice efforts to either divert SMI persons from jail or facilitate their successful community reentry from prison, and I'm sure many of you are aware of many of these. Mental health courts, critical time intervention, crisis intervention teams, which is a police-based intervention, forensic assertive community treatment, which I'll be talking about today, which is an adaptation of assertive community treatment, housing first, and expedited Medicaid restoration, to name just a few of those interventions. So I'll talk a little bit about FACT. And so the preamble that will be relevant for all presentations is over, and now I'll start with my own research topic here. So assertive community treatment, it's been around for 30 plus years, probably one of the most widely studied evidence-based practices for persons with severe mental illness, and has gone through a number of adaptations over the last several decades or so. Come on in, don't be shy. One of the latest, more recent adaptations is using assertive community treatment to serve justice-involved folks with severe and persistent mental illness. And while the evidence is strong for assertive community treatment, it's weak but promising for forensic assertive community treatment. In particular, the evidence that fact can keep folks with severe mental illness who are justice-involved out of jails and prisons. Unlike ACT, which has a very large evidence base and lots of particulars about who it should serve, how it should serve, its critical ingredients, how teams need to be made up, those particulars have not been established with FACT, so there's still a great need for more rigorous research about FACT, forensic assertive community treatment. I'm included in this, but there has been a bandwagon about the growing focus on addressing the criminogenic needs of justice-involved consumers. So what is it that draws these folks into the justice system? Is it criminal thinking, criminal peers, criminal history, antisocial patterns and behaviors? And those things may be involved. And to some extent, not to lose focus on those criminogenic needs, but focus on clinical needs for treatment teams are particularly important as well. And we can't lose sight of what are the clinical needs of these folks. And I would argue that the person in the park who's drunk and disorderly and soliciting and is arrested by the local police was not having criminal thoughts as they were engaged by the police. And it was substance abuse, other issues that maybe were more likely explanation for involvement in the criminal justice system. So with that context, what are the clinical needs of jail diversion forensic assertive community treatment consumers versus prison reentry forensic assertive community treatment consumers, and how are they similar or different? So basically what I'm going to do is compare consumers of a jail diversion FACT team with consumers of a prison reentry FACT team, and just look at their clinical and demographic differences to try to inform practice around those two populations. So observational study design, I looked at 212 jail diversion consumers versus 192 prison reentry consumers from a large agency in Cincinnati, Ohio, right in downtown, Greater Cincinnati Behavioral Health Services. A couple of things about FACT teams, they work just like ACT teams. The staffing is supposed to be the same, about 10-to-1 consumer to staff ratio, 24/7 service access. It's supposed to be all-inclusive, where the team provides all of the services needed. Psychiatrist, nurse practitioner, come on in. Sure. The prison reentry FACT team serves felons released from the Ohio Department of Correction. Does include a parole officer on the team that works closely. The jail diversion team serves local mental health court participants in Cincinnati, and it serves mainly nonviolent misdemeanor folks that are diverted from the local justice center onto this team. Okay, and then I use the agency's administrative data. So anyone who had some service from the jail diversion or prison reentry team during this time period was sampled in the study, and used demographic and clinical information from the agency's administrative data, which include diagnoses from the psychiatrist, clinical impressions from FACT staff and other staff, and I'll talk more about that as we go. All right. So here are the differences between jail diversion versus pre-entry folks. Anything with an odds ratio is statistically significant. So male, slightly more males in the prison reentry versus the jail diversion group. No difference in race, about an equal number of whites and African Americans. Slightly older prison population, more folks who are diagnosed with schizophrenia, fewer folks in the prison reentry with substance use issues. The red circle around the physical health issues, although that's not statistically significant, I just wanted to draw your attention to the high rates of physical health problems among both populations. And I'll draw some conclusions about the need for integrated primary care in a little bit. Prison reentry folks more likely to have their benefits, SSI or SSDI, less likely to live independently and more likely to live in assisted living arrangements. So what I would argue here is the prison reentry folks seem a little bit more, and this should resonate with you and it's intuitive, a little more institutionalized in terms of the severity of their mental illness, their disabilities, their ability to live independently in the communities. There'll be some practice implications about this. Here are some of the clinical impressions of FACT staff. Again, treatment noncompliance is not statistically significant between the two groups, but look how high that is in both groups. Certainly there's some practice implications there. Suicide attempts, interpersonal violence, sexual abuse, homelessness. Extreme weather was kind of a quirky finding that I asked my clinical colleagues about. And what that was overdressing in extremely hot weather, which if you think about someone who's institutionalized, who's used to wearing all of their articles of clothing at the same time, when you get someone in a hot city in the summer and there's medications that interacts with the overdressing, not supposed to be in the sun and so forth, there's implications for overheating and health problems. So I thought that was funny. Any risk factor, if you look, again, that's not statistically significant, but 80% of the jail diversion folks have one of the above risk factors, and 69% of the prison reentry folks have at least one risk factor. And then high rates of multiple risk factors. So if you think about the treatment implications of these things, to summarize, looks like the reentry folks are slightly older, more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia versus bipolar disorder, more likely to have their benefits, more likely to live in supervised housing or group homes, and again, they're at risk in extreme weather. So clinically relevant issues with both populations, again, as I said, physical health issues, so the integration of primary care, behavioral health care is critical for these folks. High rate of identified risk factors identified by the clinical teams on both FACT teams, and then noncompliance with treatment. So if you think about engagement strategies or the time it takes to engage these folks and get them to be adherent with treatment, certainly becomes an issue. The other thing I wanted to look at was gender differences within these teams. So are there differences between the men and the women on the prison reentry and the jail diversion teams? Now, there were no differences with respect to the prison reentry team. Surprisingly, it was fairly homogenous in terms of diagnoses, age, clinical issues, and so forth. But that wasn't the case with the jail diversion team. So there's some real differences between male and female. Fewer white consumers and more African-American consumers among the males in the jail diversion team. More likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia and substance use issues. Less likely to be, so I'm talking about the males again on the jail diversion team. Less likely to be living independently, and then more likely to be treatment noncompliant and homeless, and this certainly should make sense, less likely to experience interpersonal violence or sexual abuse. So women, on the other hand, are about equally split between African American and white, more likely to have mood disorders rather than schizophrenia, more likely to live independently, and more likely to experience interpersonal violence and sexual abuse, and women with SMI are prime targets for this kind of abuse in the community. So there are some real treatment implications here. If you think about it, and this resonated with my clinical colleagues at this agency, it's almost as if there are two distinct populations on the on one jail diversion team. There's a group of African-American men more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia who are homeless and treatment noncompliant. All right? Second population are females with mood disorders who are at risk for interpersonal violence, sexual abuse, and so forth. Hey. So if you think about implications for the similarities and dissimilarities, both between prison reentry and jail diversion, and then within the jail diversion group. So for reentry, FACT teams who are focused on helping consumers reintegrate into their communities should focus on increasing independence and skill building, helping folks become less institutionalized and more used to functioning as a part of a community, focusing on mental health education and adherence, and certainly connecting folks to housing and integration of physical health services. For the diversion folks, what's the word for this kind of new class, the new young chronics who are less likely to be institutionalized in state hospitals and are more street smart, street savvy, living out on the streets, doing whatever they need to do to survive? Well, moving these folks from survival to effective community living should be a strategy for these jail diversion folks. So outreach and engagement, looking for the hook. Remember, there are distinct differences for males and females. For males, trying to get them hooked into housing and substance abuse. For females, addressing undiagnosed, untreated trauma, physical health issues for both, and trying to get these folks hooked up to the appropriate benefits. Be some implications for the jail diversion. Strengths and limitations. So it's an in-depth comparison using administrative data, which is also a limitation, of jail diversion versus prison reentry FACT populations, and can offer some guidance for communities that are trying to grow their own jail diversion teams or grow their own prison reentry teams, and getting clinical folks, which they're probably already doing, to think about population-specific and gender-specific interventions. Few limitations, again, using administrative data. The hazards of using administrative data are well documented. Generalizability, so this is one setting. Do findings from Cincinnati necessarily generalize to Seattle or Pinellas County, Florida, or other places? I find, in my opinion at least, justice-involved consumers are fairly homogenous group, that they're impoverished, they're disabled, they don't function particularly well in the community. So anyway, this needs to be replicated and has implications for both practice and policy around forensic assertive community treatment for jail diversion and prison reentry. How's my time?
5 minutes.
Well under 5 minutes. Contact information. I'll take one or two questions, but then we'll move into Dr. Morrissey's. Yes, Mark.
So with these fact teams that are homogeneous in terms of forensic involvement, or are these mixed non-forensic?
Yeah, homogeneous. So the fact prison reentry team only took folks out of the prison, and the jail diversion team only served folks out of the local jail justice center. And this agency has two other ACT teams. They've got a traditional team that takes folks out of local hospitals and a homeless team that targets folks who are homeless. So it's kind of a large agency that serves all these. Good question. One more? Yep.
How did you define severe mental illness?
That's a great question. The agency defined them as severely mentally ill, but mostly the agency only serves folks with severe mental illness. So it's a conjunction of diagnosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression with psychotic features, evidence of disability that they're impaired, and duration, that they've had these diagnoses for a year or longer. And the state of Ohio has ACT criteria that they must meet a threshold of severe and persistent mental illness, and then they have to have two or more hospitalizations in a calendar year to qualify for ACT. So, good question.